What happens when you take Callaway's most successful fairway wood of all time and make it even more versatile and powerful? You get the new Steelhead XR. Callaway really outdid themselves this time. With the recontoured Hawkeye sole and supercharged face cup technology, Steelhead XR is longer and more versatile than ever. When you play Steelhead XR, there's no such thing as a bad lie. To learn more about the Steelhead XR, go to CallawayGolf.com today. Callaway, the number one fairway wood in golf.
Hello, fellow golfaholics, and welcome to another edition of Back Nine Report. Every week, we bring you everything and anything golf. Usually, our co-host, Carlos Torres, opens the show, but tonight he's unable to join us, so we are pleased to welcome our special guest host, the European golf guru, live from Scotland, Kieran Clark. Welcome, good sir.
Well, thank you, Fred, as always, live from the home of golf, St. Andrews, Scotland, of course. And thanks for having me on once again, as always. And as you both know, Fred, Carlos leaves significant, gaping, elephant-sized shoes for us to fill. Not the elephants wear shoes, of course, but we'll do our best to not leave the Back Nine Report in flames during his absence this evening. So, Fred, so much to discuss. I'm looking forward to it. So let's crack on.
Yeah, Carlos is kind of the glue that keeps this show running week in and week out. And when he's not here, we kind of struggle along, Humpty Bump. But we'll make it through. So, yeah, Kieran, I want to open the show. Our hearts are certainly with the good people of Houston and Southeast Texas, still recovering from Hurricane Harvey, as well as Florida that has just witnessed the devastation of Irma. So we want to wish the best for everyone affected by those terrible storms and hope for better things to come down there. So, but there's still golf action, Kieran. So this week there were no PGA Tour or Web.com Tour events, but there's still a ton of golf. There was a rare Lydia Ko sighting on the LPGA Tour leaderboard. Budding European Tour star Matt Fitzpatrick won in Switzerland. And the women of the LPGA are heading to Lake Geneva for the final major of the year. But we lead off our show tonight with a review of the action from the 46th Walker Cup that was held in Los Angeles last week. Kieran, please tell us what happened.
Well, it was somewhat one-sided, to say the least, Fred. But yes, the 46th Walker Cup was played at Los Angeles Country Club. Yeah, just the second time that the event had actually been held in California. And Great Britain and Ireland actually arrived there as defending champions. They won the trophy so convincingly 2 years ago. Of course, none of those 10 players from that week were at Royal Living and St. Anne's 2 years ago were actually present this time under Captain Andy Ingram, who had stepped in for Craig Watson, who sadly had to miss the showpiece due to serious illness within his family. And for the United States, and the delightfully named Spider Miller, only Maverick McNealy was a survivor from the team of 2 years ago, as the Americans sought kind of redemption from that crushing loss in 2015. And my goodness, you know, they certainly delivered, Fred. You know, it was truth be told, this Walker Cup was not much of a contest, with the home team taking a commanding four-point lead after a dominant single session on Saturday. And of course, those who don't know, the Walker Cup comprises of 2 days of foursomes followed by singles, a little bit different to the Ryder Cup or the President's Cup or the Foreign Cup. But in day two, you know, after that big start to the US, it didn't get any better for JB and I, with the deficit extended to 6 points after the morning session, with the humiliation complete during the singles. With only David Boot from Wales, who had actually just turned professional the other day, he's the only player from JB and I to win one of his singles matches on Sunday, one of the 10 matches. And the US ultimately clinched the Walker Cup by 17 points to 7, nine, sorry, a crushing, devastating margin, just an unbelievable loss, humiliating, I would say, for JB and I. So there was redemption for Spider Miller after the last time out, of course, with the loss convincingly in England. And there was real success for three particular players who all won four matches for the US, which is a first that's ever happened in the long history of the tournament. There was Colin Morikawa, Maverick McNealy, and Doug Kim. They all won all four of their matches. So that was a great achievement for those guys. And they were the real standout performers for the US. And there were many sullen faces, depressed faces amongst the JB and I players during the closing ceremony. They looked rather glum, to say the least. But of course, this continues a rather odd run of dominance for the home teams of either side, who have won 11 of the last 13 Walker Cups. JB and I last won in the US 16 years ago when the likes of Luke Donald and Graham McDowell were on that team. And I have to say, Fred, I do remain convinced that an integration of continental Europe is necessary for the Walker Cup, just as it was in the Ryder Cup. It would enhance the event going forward and keep it competitive, both home and away, for JB and I, and sure to be a real success going forward. But as for LA Country Club, you know, which is set to host the US Open in 6 years' time in 2023, it looks certainly excellent on television. You know, classic, imaginative design. It's certainly within itself, the USGA's vision of creativity or the setups, I guess you can call it. Albeit there were a couple of greens that were a little bit silly, I think, running at the speed that they were. Some of the undulations were a little bit extreme. That tends to be the case now, the green speeds that they run at most golf courses in the modern game, which is a wider issue altogether. But it should be a terrific venue for the US Open in 6 years' time. Of course, though, I have kind of read things and heard things that the rather exclusive golf club itself was criticised by certain members of the media who were there last week for being rather unwelcome and unfriendly to visitors. So coupled with the ticket price of $75, it makes you wonder really whether the USGA is actually serious about growing the game, as so many like to put it. However, Fred, you know, those are my thoughts. It was a great Walker Cup for the US, and not so much for JB and I, but it will certainly be interesting to see where many of these players go next with their careers.
Well, absolutely. This is the cream of the cream de la cream of the amateurs, the top collegiate players, as it were. And, you know, I'm like you. It was my first look at L.A. Country Club, and I was totally impressed. I thought it was absolutely beautiful. Matter of fact, I got to see a fair amount on Saturday and Sunday of the Walker Cup, and I really was looking at the course more than anything else. So I was pretty impressed. I can't wait now for the U.S. Open that will be coming there down the road. But, you know, George Thomas designed L.A. Country Club, Riviera, and Bel Air all right there together in the L.A. area. He went to L.A. to grow roses and ended up building golf courses, and he didn't take a dime for it. So, he doesn't have a big body of work, but what he did is pretty good stuff. So, you mentioned Maverick McNealy has been number one amateur, you know, went to Stanford, has been poo-pooing thoughts of turning pro, but I guess he did say he's going to turn pro here in the next couple of weeks. You know, a lot of the GB and I players attend college in the United States. I think David Boot was a teammate of McNealy's at Stanford for a couple of years. And then it was nice to see an older guy, really, Stuart Haugestad, who's had such a great year as an amateur, a mid-am, you know, do quite well at the Walker Cup. So, you know, he won his singles match, and he's from the L.A. area, so kind of a homeboy there. So yeah, I thought it was quite interesting. I enjoyed watching it, and I thought the timing.
You say there that Stuart Haugestad's an older guy. He's 26. He's hardly a senior.
Well, yeah, but he's a mid-AM, so he's not like the 19, 20, 21-year-old college kid. Yeah. You know, I thought the timing for the event was really well planned, with a weekend with no PGA or Web.com tour events. The Walker Cup kind of was the go-to event for the weekend to watch. So, and then we're going to see these guys, as you mentioned, these are guys we're going to see on the PGA Tour in the very near future. So it's always good to see that. Hey, Kieran, there was a LPGA Tour event in a racetrack right here in Indianapolis at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. There's three holes that actually play inside the track. There was finally a Lydia Ko sighting at the top of the leaderboard, but Lexi Thompson outraced her at the Brickyard for the inaugural Indy Tech for Women Championship. Lexi said about the tradition of winners at the Speedway kissing the bricks at the start-finish line, "I'm very happy that it was me. It was such a great week overall, and it was a huge honor to be able to kiss those bricks. Definitely a memory that I'll never forget." Thompson spent most of Saturday's, yeah, I know, no lead comments here. Thompson spent most of Saturday's final round in cruise control, draining six birdies to and two bogeys in her 400 par 68. She carried a four-stroke lead over Coe to number 16, but a wayward drive found the water. She was able to birdie the final hole to capture a ninth career LPGA victory. Coe, who has struggled all season with swing issues, said her putting is the final key to the puzzle. She needed 85 putts during the week, and Thompson only took 77, and Thompson certainly isn't one of the best putters on tour, so Lydia still has a little work to do on her putting. Coe has slipped to number 8 in the Rolex ranking, but she may be peaking at the right time if she can get her putter straightened out. The LPGA's fifth major of the year is this week in France, and Coe could salvage something out of the year. Coe did set another LPGA Tour record this week, though. With $183,000 for the runner-up check, she became the fastest woman to reach $8 million in career earnings in just her 93rd start as a professional. Speed does count at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway. The previous mark was held by Yanni Tsang, who crossed the threshold in her 98th event. Lexi is the first American with multiple wins in this LPGA season, since she and Christy Kerr both notched two wins in 2015. With her second win of the season, Thompson joins I.K. Kim with 3, Sung-Yun Park with 2, and So-Young Ryu with 2 as the only multiple winners of this year. Lexi is now number 1 in the race of CME Globe, leading the tour in greens and regulation, sand saves, scoring average, and number of rounds in the 60s. She jumped over Sung-Yun Park to number 2 in the Rolex ranking, just behind number 1 So-Young Ryu. Others in the field of note, Minji Lee finished solo 3rd for her 8th top 10 of the year. Brooke Henderson had another good week, finishing T5 with Lizette Salas, Haji Kang, and Ashley Buhai, as well as Candy Kung. Christy Kerr was T11. Alex Marina, who's had a great summer, the last half of the summer, was T13. And Stacey Lewis, coming off her win in Portland last week, finished T19. So that wraps up the Indy LPGA event. Kieran, it appears that another budding young star won in Europe last week.
Well, Fred, he certainly did. And unlike Lexi Thompson, he didn't pour a glass of milk over himself like she did after she won the event at the weekend, which is rather odd. You know, actually, I've got a real problem now with strange traditions at golf tournaments. I've got a problem with people wearing jackets all the time. You know, getting jacket, you know, every event that has a jacket that they put on or a hat. Or
You're not a jacket fan?
I'm not a jacket fan. I don't mind the green jacket. It's fine. That's traditional. We can go with that. But every event now has got a jacket. And then I saw Scott McCarron 2 weeks ago. He won an event on the Champions Tour, and he's wearing a cowboy hat. Really? You know, come on.
Yeah, I know. Yeah,
surely. So I'm rallying against.
Well, how about that? How about that metal? How about that metal helmet they used to get for the Tucson that the Conquistadors used to get? I don't know, they still give that thing. Remember Phil Mickelson put that thing on when he was an amateur, 19 years old? Remember that thing?
You see, this shows you, it's not a new thing in golf. You have really strange ways of kind of celebrating your champions. But, yeah, and of course, Matt Fitzpatrick did get a red jacket to wear after he won the Omega European Masters. So, but I'm against these bizarre traditions. However, for Matt Fitzpatrick, like you say, Fred, you know, a guy who hasn't had a great season, you know, certainly compared to his impressive exploits throughout last year when he saw Rory in Dubai and he played the Ryder Cup and he really made a name for himself last season. But he hadn't quite achieved that form again this time. But the recently turned 23-year-old Englishman overcame the big-hitting Aussie Scott Hend in a playoff to win the European Masters at the stunning Crown Fair of the Air, which is surely one of the most breathtaking venues in world golf. I can't think of a more scenic spot on tour. It's just breathtaking and stunning, and it's an astonishing place, and one that Fitzpatrick has found to his liking since first playing there on an invite several years ago. And he shot a final round of 64 to finish on 14 under par, but he then had to sit back and watch as Scott Hend tried to overtake him. But of course, the Aussie was unable to do so, and the two men headed back to the 18th tee to decide who would walk away from the majestic Swiss Alps with a check of €450,000. Both men parred the hole at the first attempt, so back to the tee they went. Fitzpatrick put his approach to about 15 feet from the hole, Wow, Hearn hit a magnificent shot to 4 feet, just wonderful. But Fitzpatrick then had a putt for birdie, and it just veered away from the hole at the last second to go right to the centre of the cup, but it narrowly missed. So I had to feel then that Scott Hearn was the favourite to win, and Fitzpatrick looked like a beaten man. He was preparing to shake Scott's hand, but the Australian pulled his putt and had to settle for par. Missed a glaring chance to win the European Masters, and because he lost last year as well to Alex Norum. So Fitzpatrick knew that he'd got out of jail here. And as he headed back to the 18th tee for a third time, there was now a huge difference in the demeanour of both players. You know, Fitzpatrick was more relaxed. He was comfortable. He had a smile on his face. He was now on borrowed time, if you like. He got away with one there. Well, Hearn looked the opposite. He looked troubled. He looked like the weight of the world was on his shoulders. He was struggling. He just missed a glaring chance to win. And unsurprisingly, therefore, Fitzpatrick found the middle of the fairway with his tee shot, while his opponent carved his drive into a bunker. So that was bad enough for Hearn, but when he got to his ball, he discovered that it finished in a truly dreadful lie. So the advantage now was with Matt Fitzpatrick, who then found the green with his approach shot. Yeah, so all that Hearn could do was to address his ball with it way back in his stance, swing at it in hope. His shot barely left the ground, but he somehow managed to get it over the water, guarding the green. It was some shot, it ran through the green next to the grandstand, so he was given a free drop from there, but the ball bowed itself, and his chip ran through the green again, so it was now really, you know, in Fitzpatrick's hands from here. He rolled his ball to the side of the hole, and when Hearn wasn't able to convert his fourth shot, the title was the Young Englishman's, his fourth victory on the European Tour. And indeed, he's the youngest player from England to ever actually achieve that. Younger than Lee Westwood, younger than Sir Nick Faldo. He's the youngest player from England to ever win four events on the European Tour. And he joins some very impressive company, Fred. Sergi Ballesteros, Jose Maria Olafable, Sandy Lyle, and Sergio Garcia are all players who achieved that at that same age. Of course, all four of them are Masters champions, as did Matteo Manassero, who was also such a really exciting young Italian player when he emerged on the scene a few years ago. So Fitzpatrick now joins, you know, really strong, major championship-winning company there. And it's a reminder set of what he's actually capable of. And we kind of forget about it. You know, Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas and John Rahm, quite rightly, making the headlines this year. It's easy to overlook Fitzpatrick and just how good he is. But he certainly remains one of the game's finest young players. And Fred, this win underlines that fact. But I must now quickly segue here because I know you're going to talk about this. And the biggest story of the week, of course, was the fact that a certain someone won a Champions Tour event in Japan. You know, who was it, Fred?
Yeah, your buddy. Your old buddy.
I want to also
mention, before I get away from the jacket thing, I used to go on a golf trip every year with a bunch of guys, a bunch of friends. And the place that we went every year, you had to wear a jacket for dinner. And I never did this, but I had the great idea of going to Salvation Army or someplace and always finding the rattiest, brightest colored, ugliest sports coat that I could ever find, maybe two or three of them to fit different size guys. And finding a reason to award those to one of the guys every day and making them wear that at dinner. That was always kind of a thing that I thought about doing, but never did that. But I always thought that would be a lot of fun. Kieran, your guy, 50. He's 54 now, Kieran. You know that? 54 years old. Colin Montgomery, two-putted for par from 50 feet on the final green for a 5-under par 67, a one-stroke victory over Billy Mayfair and Scott McCarron in Japan. Monty said, "I think a little bit of nerves got in the way. The greens were perfect. You felt like you should be 5 or 6 under, but it's not that easy." Monty collected his fifth Champions Tour victory, pocketed the $400,000 for the win. It was his first in nearly a year. He won 31 times on the European Tour and topped that tour's money list a record 8 times, 7 of those in a row. Mayfair, playing 2 groups ahead of Montgomery, posted a 66 after missing a 6-foot birdie try on the last. McCarron, who had won 3 of the previous 6 events on the Champions Tour, had the lead but struggled on Sunday. He birdied the final 2 holes for a 71 to tie Mayfair. The players raved about being in Japan for the first time. McCarron said, "The people here have just been absolutely fantastic. I can't even say enough how nice everybody's been. The people that don't speak English try, or they'll teach us some Japanese. We went out last night for sushi, and we were just having a blast with everyone back there. We're laughing and giggling about what to eat. Everyone's just been wonderful. The volunteers are fantastic. This golf course was in the best shape I think we played all year long, and anybody who didn't come really missed out." Well, you know, the old guys had their fling in Japan, so now they got to fly back across the Pacific to Alberta, Canada, and we're going to talk a little bit about more about that in the Four Caddy section here in just a little bit. Karen, before we get to that, I want to just take a second before we start that to announce that NWO Golf Links, so that's our monthly magazine, digital version, is changing its name to Ohio Golf Journal. It will still include the same diverse and interesting golf content from a variety of golf writers and will reach out to a larger audience, not only in Northwest Ohio, but across the state as well. We've also constructed a new website, ohiogolfjournal.com, for readers to more easily find the magazine and click on the articles they want to read and share. The September issue features Gaylord Golf Mecca on the cover, will be published and distributed in the morning. So remember, if you don't get your copy in your email inbox, you can visit ohiogolfjournal.com and get the September issue of Ohio Golf Journal. So, Kieran, in the preview of this week's tournament action from around the world, we're going to discuss the final major of the year on the LPGA Tour in more detail in the practice range a little bit later. So we're going to open the previews this week with the third leg of the FedEx Cup, the BMW Championship. After a much-needed week off for the top players in the world, the third leg of the FedEx Cup resumes in Chicago. The field has been cut down to 70, and only 30 will be invited for the final event, the Tour Championship, the following week in Atlanta. Of course, all of the top players will be on hand. Dustin Johnson is second in the FedEx Cup, and Justin Thomas is third. Both have won the first 2 events, but Jordan Spieth is atop the FedEx Cup points list with his pair of runner-up finishes at the Northern Trust and the Dell Technologies. Hideki Matsuyama and rookie John Rahm round out the top 5. Ricky Fowler at number 6 is just outside, looking to move up. The top 5, of course, entering the Tour Championship, can win the $10 million FedEx Cup outright with a victory at Eastlake in 2 weeks. And, Kieran, I've gone on record a week or so ago to say that Justin Thomas is going to grab that this year. So I've stuck my neck out. Do you have a favorite? I know the FedEx Cup is one of your favorite events of the year.
Well, the thing is, Fred, when I was on the show with Carlos a few weeks ago, we were talking about the FedEx Cup, and I said to Carlos there that I've kind of come to peace with the FedEx Cup. You know, it is a lot of nonsense. It is rubbish. It is stupid. It is over the top. It is ridiculous and garish with the amount of money that's involved in it. However, it's four good events.
We're Americans, Kieran. That's what we do. We're Americans. That's what we do. We throw a lot of money at something and make it stupid. That's what we do.
Yeah. It's a very American idea for the top guys, not everybody else. That's a key thing. That's a very American idea. But and that's the thing. So, yeah, but I've come to peace with it. It's good events. And this week here, obviously, you've seen that top 5 you have right now. You know, if that's the top 5 going into the Tour Championship, and those are the 5 guys who have their own destiny in their hands, and if they win the Tour Championship, they win the big money, well, you know, that's going to be exciting. But like I'm saying to you, it's not exciting because of money involved. It's exciting because it's the best players, and that's the key thing, is the actual title. It doesn't mean anything. The money doesn't mean anything to us. It doesn't matter. However, it's good fun. And will Justin Thomas win the big prize? Well, right now, he's a man to beat. Obviously, he's a man in form, so you have to say probably yes. However, that man's faith, you know, somehow, he's so miraculous, he can do anything. He hasn't won any of the events, but he's still number one. So how can you beat Jordan Spieth? You can't beat him, surely.
Yeah, Spieth is definitely the wild card. And Johnson with his length and strength, if Johnson's back to form from, you know, hurting his back, clear back of the Masters, which he seems to be, that drive at the end of the Northern Trust seems to prove that, and his wedges were on target. So, Johnson and Spieth are going to be difficult to beat, but I really think Thomas is playing at a top level.
Here's a thought for you. What if somehow Rory McIlroy comes out of nowhere and wins the BMW, and then he wins next week, and somehow wins again, just like he did last year?
That's not going to happen.
I don't think it'll happen either, but you never know.
it would be fantastic if it did, but it'd give us plenty to talk about, but it ain't going to happen.
It'd be a good story, though. I always root for the story.
It would be. Absolutely, absolutely. We've got to do that. We've got to write this stuff. Hey, Kieran, tell us about the KLM Open in the Netherlands this week.
Yes, indeed, Fred. It's obviously one of the European Tour's more historic tournaments. The KLM Dutch Open was won last year by the home favourite, Joost Luiten, who shot a brilliant 63 to thrill the Dutch fans last year. And it was his second victory in the event, and it was certainly a special moment for a Dutchman. It was a real highlight, and it was great scenes around the final green as the crowd were assembled there. It was a really exciting kind of setting and a kind of amphitheater to watch a historic moment now as one of their own players won the Dutch Open, so that was fantastic. But of course, as we've just discussed there, so many of the top names are playing in America or skipping this week entirely. So there's a chance now for someone to take advantage of that kind of weaker field and potentially pick up a much-needed title. Could it be Lee Westwood? Of course, he's now 44 years of age and looking to pick up some valuable Ryder Cup qualifying points as he hopes to show that his best is not yet behind him. Even it might be, but he's trying to show that there's still some life in the old dog just yet. Or perhaps it'll be a man I mentioned earlier on, Matteo Manassero, who, of course, a young player. He won events. He won the BMW Championship at Wentworth when he was a young man, and he's still only 24, but he sort of fell off the planet. But he's been showing some kind of signs of life recently. He picked up a top 10 finish recently in the Czech Republic. So could he come through and pick up another good result here? That would be a fantastic story right there, one of the most likable players on the European Tour. But elsewhere, the likes of Bernd Wiesberger, Ryan Fox, Andy Sullivan and Ross Fisher, and of course recent European Tour winner from the US, Julian Surrey, they could pick up another title this week in Holland. So, obviously our event will be somewhat overshadowed by the PGA Tour, but they always played a very good golf course, and it's always well supported by the public, and it should be a good one. And if one of the home players is in contention, then it's going to be a great atmosphere, Fred.
Yeah, you're right. It's a good event there. You know, we have not heard anything out of Matteo Manassero for some time, so it'd be great for him to get back up there. I mean, he's one of the young guys, one of the young guys on the European Tour. And you mentioned Lee Westwood, and I just think back to last year's Ryder Cup, and Westwood being on that team, and there were much better choices than him for that. And I really think Lee is trying to hang on, and I think the game is passing him by pretty fast. So, Kieran, we've got the second leg of the Web.com Tour Final Series featuring the top 75 players from the Web.com Tour regular season and the PGA Tour players outside of the top 125. From 126 to 200, who did not make the FedEx Cup playoffs. They're going to resume this week out in Boise, Idaho, for the Albertsons Boise Open. Peter Uihlein, as we know, secured his 2018 PGA Tour card by winning in Columbus 2 weeks ago and will be looking to improve his status even farther with another high finish. The PGA Tour guys will be trying to finish inside the top 25 to regain their tour privileges, earn one of those 25 cards that's going to be issued at the end of the Web.com Tour Championship here in a couple weeks. And then you've got the young guys trying to make it to the big show, and veterans trying to keep their jobs for one more year. So the Web.com tour over the next couple of weeks, it's pretty interesting to watch. So we'd urge everybody to try and catch that. Kieran, where is the – we mentioned earlier that the Champions Tour was in Japan last week and they're back in Canada this week. Tell us about the Pacific Lynx Bear.
Yes, indeed, Fred. They've had a big journey across from Japan to Canada for the, as you say, the rather oddly named Pacific Lynx Bear Mountain Championship. It sounds very Canadian. And, of course, in this season, obviously, Bernard Langer has been the man to beat. But, of course, Scott McCarron has really run him close, and he closed the gap on Langer in the Charles Schwab Cup race in the points. And he's taken some impressive results to do so, but he's had a fantastic season, McCarron. He's had 4 wins, 3 runner-up finishes, and 10 top tens. That's pretty good. And it's pretty good for the bank balance as well. He's accrued some fair cash this year, probably more cash this year than he ever earned in the PGA Tour. And, of course, as you said earlier, Colin Montgomery, a recent winner, won last week. He's a defending champion this week. He's also in the field, as is Bernard Langer himself. He's back in the field, back in action now, 60 years of age, and he's still, you know, the fittest guy on the PGA Tour champions. So it's all set to be an excellent battle over the coming days. As I said, Monty won last year and actually beat Scott McCarron in a playoff at that time. So, you know, I'm sure McCarron will want to get this title on his locker, because he's had some great results this year, and he's the man in form right now. He's playing some just amazing golf. Also very capable player on the PGA Tour, but he's one of those guys who seems to have kind of gone up to another level since he turned 50. As so many players do, they sort of take the second wind in their career and they end up having a more successful time as a senior than what they did as a regular tour player. But there are only 4 events remaining on the schedule after this, before the Tour Championship in November. So it's if McCarron wants to kind of get ahead of Langer and take the overall season prize, then he's got to keep up that form right now. So it should be a good event. Obviously, you know, all the top names are there. So if they've all kind of survived sushi, if they're not all kind of, you know, jet lagged, then, you know, it should be good. But in light of that, I think Bernard Langer has to be the favourite, given that he wasn't in Japan last week, so he has to be the man to beat, Fred.
Any time that Bernhard Langer is in a tournament, he's the guy to beat on the Champions Tour. Everybody else is just playing for second or lower. So, hey, Kieran, I just got a flash on my computer. The USGA just announced that the 2017 U.S. Women's Mid-Am will be postponed due to Hurricane Irma. It had been scheduled to be held at Quail Creek Country Club in Naples. And, of course, Irma came right there through Naples and Fort Myers. So right now they've postponed it. They would like to try and reschedule it for that area. But for right now, it's kind of on hold, and that won't be held at the beginning of October. So, Kieran, that kind of wraps up our look at the upcoming events. I do want to mention, if you are looking for a different kind of golf news, information, and opinion, check out Back 9 Report TV on Roku. Back 9 Report TV has video tips plus offers insight and views that may not make it into the more traditional golf media outlets. In the latest edition, we feature Michigan's top golf resorts, the FedEx Cup race, and a golf tour for veterans. So get Roku. Check out the Back 9 Report TV. Kieran, do you have Roku in Scotland?
Not as far as I know. I don't know.
Well, you have to check that out, buddy. moving right along, let's move on into the Par 5 news. We have 5 news articles to discuss this evening. We try and bring you a little more insight into current news items in the golf world, plus kind of put our unique spin on it and give golf fans a little different look at the golf news. So, Kieran, the USGA and the RGA, the RNA just closed the window on getting comments on the new rules. You're going to tell us about that.
Yes, Fred, they did indeed. And, of course, as we all kind of remember from earlier this year, the RNA and USGA unveiled an extensive revision of the rules of golf that was presented to the general public back in March. Golfers were then asked to submit their comments and thoughts on the many proposed changes. And of course, as you said there, that window has now closed. In a joint statement, the two governing bodies said the RNA and the ESGA have received comments on the proposed new rules from more than 22,000 golfers in 102 countries, as well as representatives of golf organizations throughout the world, providing valuable feedback as the organizations work toward the implementation of the new rules on January 1st, 2019. With the worldwide survey and evaluation period now complete, the RNA and USGA and their respective committees will continue to review all comments received with the goal of finalizing the new rules next spring and beginning a comprehensive education program later in 2018. The RNA and the USGA began an extensive review of the rules starting in 2012 with the intention of making them easier to understand and to apply. A draft of the new rules, reduced from the current 34 to 24 rules, was released in March, beginning the six-month feedback period that was open to the entire golf community. So, Fred, we don't know the specifics as of yet, but they did provide us with some wonderfully titled emerging themes that came from the public response, and these were: golfers are enthusiastic about the scope and direction of the overall changes, such as pace of play improvements, the elimination of penalties, and streamlined procedures. Golfers provided their most feedback on the proposed rule changes focused on the putting green, such as putting with the flag stick left in the hole, repairing spike marks, and eliminating the penalty for accidentally moving a ball, the creation of penalty areas, extending water hazard type relief, and eliminating penalties for moving loose impediments and grounding a club, and also the new dropping procedures, including the size of relief areas. So golfers were quite keen in commenting on those things, as well as they also welcomed the new players' edition of the rules and found it much easier to read and understand rather than the little Bible that you get right now. So Fred, these rules are set to come into effect, as I say, on January 1st, 2019. So that's 22,000 comments to go through. And funnily enough, Fred, the RNA are actually right now having their autumn meeting on the old course at St Andrews right now. The course for the next week and a half of playing it every day, taking all the tee times, they're out there playing golf every day. So I'm sure they're talking about it amongst themselves and going through all those wonderful comments that were sent to them. I highly doubt that, to say the least. So, you know, really? The RNA, they're there having a good time there, joining on the golf course, but I find it hard to believe that the USGA and RNA are going to go through 22,000 comments. I think in the end, they will do exactly what it is they want to do.
I agree with you 100%. This is all lip service. It sounds good. It's very politically correct. But when it all boils down to it, the USGA and the RNA say, okay, this is what we think, and this is how it'll be. So, I'm with you. Hey, I want to talk a little bit about the new PGA of America Hall of Fame. Now, this is the PGA of America. It's not the World Golf Hall of Fame. The PGA of America announced last week that Gary Player, Rene Powell, Mickey Wright, and Lou Worsham were among seven individuals to be inducted into the PGA Hall of Fame. Everyone is aware of Gary Player's accomplishments, 9 major championship victories, one of only 5 men to hold a career Grand Slam. He won 165 titles on every continent around the world and was a member of the Big Three with Jack Nicklaus and Arnold Palmer. He brought golf to all parts of the world and still today never balks at an opportunity to jump on a plane or stand in front of a camera and bring the word of golf to all of us. Lou Worsham learned a game as a caddy, was an assistant pro at Chevy Chase outside of Washington, D.C., got his first head pro job at Burning Tree in the D.C. area, and became the head pro at Oakmont in 1947, one of the elite jobs in all of golf. He played his best golf in the early 40s and early 50s, all the while maintaining a club bro job. He beat Sam Snead to win the 1947 U.S. Open in a playoff and added 5 more PGA titles to his shelf during his career. Mickey Wright won 82 LPGA Tour events, including 13 major championships, and was one of the early leaders for women's golf in this country. She learned the game from the legendary teacher Harvey Pennick. Ben Hogan attributes Mickey with having the best golf swing he ever witnessed. But I want to take a minute to talk about Rene Powell. And, Karen, I don't know if you're familiar with this name. She is from Ohio, so I have a soft spot in my heart for her. But that's not the only reason I want to talk about her. Her father, William, this is a tremendous family story. Her father was a leader in golf, not only in Ohio. He built the first golf course owned and operated by an African American. Even though the banks wouldn't loan him any money, he was a veteran of World War II. He always had steady jobs. The bank, you know, they we're not going to give you a loan to build a golf course. It wouldn't help him get started. He also found the time to teach his daughter to play a little golf and become one of the best ambassadors for golf the world has ever known. Renee Powell played on the LPG Tour from 1967 to 1980. But her accomplishments far exceed her endeavors on the golf course. Her love is teaching and bringing the game to golfers all over the world. She's the first woman of color to earn PGA of America membership. She's the first African-American woman to be a head professional in England, right there in your backyard, Karen, and was one of the first women to be elected into the RNA. She has been a lifelong teacher of the game and still continues to operate and teach at the same family-owned Clearview Golf Club outside of Canton that her father built. Renee Powell has been a trailblazer, teacher, and ambassador for the game of golf all her life. Hers is truly one of the greatest stories ever lived in golf. How the World Golf Hall of Fame has overlooked her outstanding accomplishments is a travesty of the highest order. In addition, PGA members George Henry Schneider, Mike Schultz, and Joe Tesori will be enshrined with player Wright, Worsham, and Powell. We certainly want to congratulate all, and World Golf Hall of Fame, folks, if you're listening, Renee Powell should be in that Hall of Fame. Kieran, back to you.
Yes, I have to agree. That's a wonderful story, and I am familiar with that name. And, it's a wonderful family story and an inspirational one. I think it's one that it should be recognized more widely, and this is a kind of first step to doing that. But I think, yes, a greater recognition of the World Golf Hall of Fame would be a welcome addition. However, I must quickly say that you mentioned that Gary Player, we're all aware of his accomplishments, but if you weren't, it wouldn't take long for Gary Player to remind you of all the things he's achieved in his career.
Absolutely.
That seems to be his only purpose in life these days, is to remind everybody of how good he was. That's all he does. I think we're going to forget about him if he doesn't do it. So his Twitter account is constantly, I'm Grand Slam winning golfer, I'm this, I'm that. Well, that's up to you, Gary. You did it, I guess, so fair enough. However, away from Gary Player.
Kieran, I think Gary has a little bit of envy syndrome because Jack and Arnold get all the publicity, and Gary kind of gets the leftovers, and so he's kind of always pushing to the front for the microphone and the camera, and he's had a tremendous career. He's was a tremendous player, and really traveling around the world and promoting golf like he did is a tremendous story and a great accomplishment and very admirable. But I know sometimes his droning on in front of a camera or a microphone does get a little bit tiresome. You're right.
It does indeed, yes. But a great golfer, but sometimes questionable personality. However, moving on to, I guess, more questionable things in the world right now. And of course, unless you're living under a rock right now, you will know about the issues going on in the Korean Peninsula right now. Obviously, with nuclear tests and tensions between the North Koreans and really the rest of the world, I guess you can say, particularly the United States and Japan and South Korea. But of course, the PGA Tour is actually monitoring these issues at the moment because they're playing the inaugural CG Cup there next month. And, of course, we saw North Korea recently test an atomic bomb, I think it was, and the PGA Tour is closely monitoring these developments. And Golf Channel reports, Fred, that the Tour is scheduled to play its first sanctioned event in South Korea next month, a 78-player field, which will include the top 60 available players from the season's FedEx Cup points list, so a good field there in place. But of course, these kind of international security issues are hanging over the whole thing right now. The Tour planned to issue a security and safety guidelines document on Wednesday coming up to players And but the circuit itself and Jay Monahan, the commissioner, expects to play the event to go ahead as it was next month. But a statement from the tour said, from a safety and security point of view, we will continually monitor, review, and evaluate the situation. Should future circumstances or developments dictate a change in our position, we will promptly advise all parties accordingly. So at the moment, the event's going to be played as expected, and the players will be there in place, and we'll be, you know, having the first event in South Korea, which is obviously a big deal for the PGA Tour. So hopefully it'll all go nice and smoothly. And Justin Thomas, Jason Day, Adam Scott, Paul Casey, and the players' champion, Siwoo Kim, are all committed to play in the event itself, so it's got a really strong field there. But of course, Fred, you mentioned Justin Thomas earlier. He's your pick to win the FedEx Cup. And to be honest with you, right now, with the way Justin Thomas is playing, Fred, I expect him to fall the Korean prices by himself when he's there.
do some negotiation there. There you go. Kieran, we had a situation in California last week. A college kid, of all the rounds, of all the great rounds that have been played on Pebble Beach over the years, I mean, we've seen it, you know, Tom Watson chipping in, Nicklaus winning, Tiger Woods tearing the place apart. No one had ever shot better than 62 until last week. A college kid shot a 61 at Pebble Beach. You know, a 61 on a par 72 golf course is a feat of high accomplishment on any golf course. But posting 11 under par on one of golf's most precious golfing sites, Pebble Beach is a memory for a lifetime. A senior at Texas Tech, Hurley Long, did just that, however. How dare he treat that hallowed ground along Carmel Bay with such disrespect? Long was competing in the second round with his team in a collegiate event, the Carmel Cup, after holding a 45-foot putt for birdie on 17 and another 10-footer for birdie at the last. He carded a new Pebble Beach course record, 11 under par, 61. Tom Kite and David Duvall were the previous co-owners of the course record. They had both shot 10 under par 62s during the AT&T Pebble Beach, although both of those rounds were played under winter rules. Can you say asterisk? There will be no question about young Long's accomplishment, however. He has the signed and witnessed scorecard, plus the course awarded him a flag denoting his memorable round. Long went on to add a 67 in the last round to tie for the lead with Oklahoma State's Hayden Wood, but beat him in a playoff for the title. 61, Kieran. When was the last time you fired a 61 for 18 holes? Not 9, 18.
How about never? I know that's, I think a 61 for about 30, 12 holes would be quite good for me these days. Quite an amazing round of golf there. And you mentioned, obviously, the previous holders of the title having played in winter rules. And it reminds me, actually, of the old course here at St. Andrews, which is kind of the equivalent, I guess, of Pebble Beach here in the UK, where there was a wonderful list of all the best scores over the years in the old course. It was back to the 1870s when a guy shot, I think it was 77 or something like that, crazy round for those days. And then there's actually a round from Curtis Strange back in the late 80s of 62. He was the first man to shoot 62 on the old course. But I don't think they liked it very much, because actually when they went from the old course by about 200 yards, they scrubbed out his record and never counted again. I think poor Curtis has forever been kind of bitter about that fact. I think we'll count his course record around the old course, because he deserved it, really. It was back in the Dunhill Cup, I think, back in the late 80s. So, yes, course records are fantastic. These kind of historic venues in 61, you know, that will take some beating. And when the USGA get their hands on the Pebble Beach in a couple of years' time, I don't think there'll be any 61s around there when the US Open goes back, because the USGA will turn the golf course into a Mickey Mouse layout like they usually do, you know, narrow fairways and dead greens and all the rest of it. However, in terms of golf courses, Fred, and Pebble Beach gets a mention here once or twice, many of the major publications in golf, of course, enjoy releasing their top 100 guides to the world's best golf courses, ranking them all kind of usually kind of oddly, randomly, and seemingly without much thought. No one ever actually agrees with them. but it generates a lot of conversation, which is what they want. However, golf.com took a twist on the subject by asking 75 panelists to give their honest opinion on the course and generally selected and provide their answers to several pressing questions, including which of the top 100 are underrated and indeed overrated. Let's see what they said. So what is the most overrated course on world golf top 100 ranking courses? And 15% of the panelists responded with Seminole, which of course is a well-known course, highly regarded, but a lot of the panelists thought it was the most overrated golf course on the list. But of course, the upcoming Tour and Crenshaw renovation will surely help that immensely. But a golf course that isn't necessarily a favourite amongst some of the panelists. So what were the other golf courses that the panelists deemed to be overrated? They also mentioned Baltusrol, the lower course there. Obviously has a great history and strong championship credentials, but apparently it's a long, boring slog of long par fours, so not very interesting. And now, Fred, Sacrilege. What is the third most overrated golf course in the top 100? Oh, it's Pebble Beach. Apparently the inland holes are good, but they're not top 10 in the world. So there you go, Pebble Beach. Nice views, but not as good a golf course as some people think it is. And what was the next most overrated golf course? It was Medina number 3, which was deemed to be uninteresting and predictably bunkered. So there we go. But on the other hand, which of the golf courses that are ranked in the top 100 that people tend to overlook or underrate? Well, number 1 on the list was actually one fairly near me, which is in North Berwick, in East Lothian in Scotland, near the capital Edinburgh. A wonderful classic golf course, one of the most influential courses in terms of course architecture. It has some wonderfully iconic holes, and it's one of the most purely fun golf courses to play, and that was indeed what the consensus was here. They said it was the most fun golf course in the world. And what else appeared on this list? Well, Los Angeles Country Club, which of course we just saw last week at the Walker Cup. It was a golf course not many people have really seen or played, but it's unquestionably a masterpiece, and the panelists enjoyed that, with 4% of them identifying what LA Country Club as being the most underrated golf course. But now, somewhat oddly, Pebble Beach appeared as the most overrated golf course for many, but also the most underrated. And so there we go. That's an interesting one. Obviously, it's a great experience to play there, and it shows you how divisive these things can be. Well, some people thought it was overrated, some people thought it was underrated, so bizarrely. But in terms of other golf courses mentioned, we also had Royal Melbourne East. We had St. George's Hill in England, which is a wonderful classic Harry Colt course. Also had Valderrama, a former Ryder Cup venue, and Yale, master architecture course there. So who was the greatest architecture? Well, Alistair Mackenzie, number 1. Obviously, then Augusta National and Cypress Port is number 1 for people on the list. So who else is there? Harry Colt, C.B. McDonald, Donald Ross, and Tillinghast are also popular ones. Who is the greatest modern architect? Well, it's Bill Coore, who's regarded as being a genius, with his partner, former Masters champion Ben Crenshaw, Tom Doak, Pete Dye, and Gil Hanks, who also mentioned that Gil Hanks, of course, getting particular praise for the way he managed the Rio Olympic golf course that everyone really loved last year, given the land he had available to him. So, Fred, these top 100 rankings are always interesting, always a bit odd, but what is the most kind of design feature that players and panelists kind of overvalue? Most of them describe being conditioning. It's an outdoor sport, you want to play perfect, playing AstroTurf, perfect fairways and greens isn't always necessary. Difficulty. Does a course have to be hard to be good? Of course not. It's being fun, it's a game, it's supposed to be enjoyed. And also aesthetics and length are also mentioned as being overrated features. But if you were to choose one golf course in the top 100, which would you play every day for the rest of your life? Well, the most popular answer was Cypress Point, which of course is an extraordinary piece of land. You don't get to see it on tour these days, but it's an amazing place, very close to Pebble Beach, and it's even more spectacular than Pebble. It's a wonderful spot, and that was the most popular course to go and play. We also saw National Golfers of America, was also mentioned by 11% of the panelists, and St. Andrews Old Course, obviously the most historic venue in the game, was also mentioned as being the golf course that many would love to play every day for the rest of their lives. And of course, predictably, the other two were Augusta National and Royal Melbourne. And again, the answers were, if you had one round to play, where would it be? The answers were roughly the same. Royal Melbourne was up there, Cypress Point, the old course at St Andrews. So, Fred, I'm going to turn it over to you. If you had one golf course that you could play for the rest of your life, that's it, which golf course would it be?
Well, I can't narrow it down to just one, Kieran. I have several. I've had the opportunity to play Crystal Downs up in Michigan a couple times, and it's pretty nice. I have had the opportunity to play Seminole, and I enjoyed it thoroughly. It's very enjoyable to play. I will agree that it's not that difficult. The greens are difficult. There's plenty of room to hit the ball if you're a long hitter. The greens are the thing there. I just played a course this week, Kieran. It's called Monroe Golf and Country Club. It's a Donald Ross course. I think it was opened in 1922. And I could really play that golf course pretty much every day. I enjoyed my round there as much as any round of golf I've played anywhere. But I've played courses with tremendous views. I've played golf courses like Erin Hills this year that hosted a U.S. Open. So, there's a lot. I can't narrow it down to one. But for me, Kieran, my criteria for a course that I'd want to go to extends outside the golf course itself. I need a golf course that is fun to play. And for a guy that's getting older, I don't need a difficult golf course. I want something that's fun, that looks presentable, but is playable. And this golf course I told you, Monroe Country Club, fits that bill very easily. But I also want a nice clubhouse with a nice room to have a nice meal, maybe with a bar and where you can sit around and shoot the breeze with your guys after you get done playing and maybe spend a little time, and a good staff, which includes the pro and the people in the restaurant. I have other needs rather than just the golf course. And I have to say, along that line, after we were done with our round at Seminole, we went in and had lunch in the clubhouse, toured the locker room, the historic locker room, and the cool factor at Seminole is way more important than the golf course. If you're just grading the golf course there, you're missing the point. The place is just off the charts on the cool factor, Kieran. So I have a little different way of measuring golf courses than maybe most people do. So what about you, Kieran? You're right there with the old course. You're there with King's Barnes. You got Carnoustie right there close to you. You've got some great golf. I mean, where are you going to go?
Well, I think in the end I have to go with the old course, which again is the most sort of iconic venue we have here. It's a fascinating golf course to play. It's challenges are kind of subtle. It's very strategic. You can play it in any conditions. It changes dramatically. The wind direction, it becomes a very different golf course. It's one that it kind of creeps up on you. It's not the most visually spectacular as such when you first see it, but when you get around it, you see it in certain conditions. A low light illuminates up, and there's so many undulations in the golf course. The greens are huge, and it's just there's so many different ways to play the golf course because it's both the narrowest and widest golf course in the world. It's a very small bit of land, but the fairways are massive, the greens are huge, and it's all about angles and playing aggressively or playing defensively, and so many bunkers to avoid. So you can really play a golf course for 1,000 times, and it would never be the same at any time. So that's fascinating. And obviously that walk up the last few holes, back towards the historic town, playing 17, walking up the last and 18, crossing the Slocum Bridge, and finishing off before Tom Morris's shop in the Army Clubhouse. That's pretty hard to beat. So if I had one golf course to play for the rest of my life, it would have to be the old course, I have to say.
Yeah, that would be pretty tough to beat. Well, that kind of wraps up our Par 5 news tonight. We do not have a very important guest. Kieran is our very important guest this evening, and he's
Thank
live
you very much,
with us. You are always our very important special guest. We're going to talk. We're going to move on into our practice range segment, and we're going to discuss a little bit about. We're going to go back and forth about the Evian Championship, which is the final major of the year on any tour. It's the fifth major for the LPGA Tour season. And last year, Injie Chun made golf history with a stunning wire-to-wire victory, set a major championship scoring record for both men and women with 21 under par. So, we're in France. We're near the border of Switzerland. We're kind of up in the mountains. We're on the shores of Lake Geneva. You were talking about Crans, Montana, up in the Swiss mountains last week for the European Tour. This week we got some more views that are going to hit TV. They're just unbelievable. Lake Geneva is one of the most beautiful spots in the world. The Evian Championship began in 1994. It was an event on the Ladies European Tour for its first 6 years. In 2000, it became a jointly sponsored event with the LPGA and the LET Tours. Commissioner Michael Wan genuflected and deemed it a major in 2013. I'm sure there was plenty of money that changed hands for that also. Past winners include Suzanne Pedersen, Yuju Kim, Lydia Ko, and, of course, Injie Chun last year. It is contested on the Evian Resort Golf Club along the south shore of Lake Geneva, near the French border. It is one of the most stunningly beautiful locations in the world. The course will play around 6,500 yards, but at altitude it plays much shorter. The problem seems to be bad weather. Every year for the Evian, rains tend to make the course difficult to maneuver and play around. The purse of $3.65 million is second only to the LPGA on the LPGA Tour to the U.S. Women's Open, which was raised this year to $5 million. Kieran, we will discuss the validity of the Evian as a major later, but first give us a rundown on who's hot and who's not going into this week's event.
Well, I think we're going to have to start with Lex Thompson. You know, of course, won last week. She has to be the kind of the hot favorite, if you like, coming in. She's the player in form. She also played well at the Women's British Open near me at King's Barnes last month as well. So she has kind of major credentials right there. She's, you know, obviously the only American player to win more than once on the LPGA Tour this season. She's potentially, she could become world number one this week should certain results go her way. So I think she's coming in here with a lot of form, a lot of confidence, and of course she's had a really fascinating year. Obviously began with that kind of awful moment at the AMA Inspiration, the rules issue, the four-shot penalty, losing that event in the playoff, her second major potentially, you know, the most crushing loss, heartbreaking. She was devastated, she was in tears. It was really difficult to watch, and it was, but the way she's kind of handled that and kind of bounced back from it has been really incredible. You know, she's played well all summer, played well at the Women's British Open, with a real obviously standout at the end of the Solheim Cup, that amazing match she played with Anna Nordqvist. It was unbelievable that back night. She came back from the dead to come right back at the end. It was an amazing golf, some of the best golf I've seen this year, and anybody, male or female. And, of course, picking up that win last week. So I think Lexi has to be the favourite. And, of course, Neil also, I have to say it because her caddy is, of course, Kevin McAlpine from Scotland, who indeed actually holds one of the course records on the old course of St Andrews. He was a very fine amateur golfer in his day. He won the Scottish Amateur and Scottish Match Play Championship. I think he shot 63 on the old course in the Lynx Trophy event, which is a big amateur tournament held in St Andrews every year. So Kevin McAlpine is a very good caddy to have, a fine player, and they work well together. So for that Scottish interest, I have to kind of back Lexi this week. But obviously, she's in great form. The one player, obviously, Lydia Ko has had a very strange season where, you know, she's set so many records in the past 5 or 6 years. She's achieved so much. She's been a phenom. But this year, she's winless. She's been winless since last summer. And her year has been no top tens in the majors, struggling for swing, all parts of her game, also so many changes off the course of her coach, from her caddies. It hasn't been a very settled camp. But recent, of course, like you say there, she finished second in the LPGA last week. She feels more confident with her game. She's found a putting stroke again. She also won this event a couple of years ago. You know, could she, you know, kind of come through and end what's been a fairly miserable season with another major. Well, maybe it's a long shot given her form, but you know, she's achieved so much in her career so far. You know, you just never know. She could just cross that line and come through and pick up another major. You know, she's always capable. You can never rule out a player of that immense talent. But what, of course, of the world number one, Sagan Wu, who, of course, didn't play last week, which actually missed the cut in her last event on the tour a few weeks ago, end of August. So she's not coming in for the best form. She hasn't had a top 10 since the US Women's Open back in July. So she's not having great form, but, you know, she's always capable, always a great player, always has a potential. Fenway Park, you know, of course, is, you know, a big hitter, like Lexi, can reduce any golf course to its knees, you know, always capable, will certainly be regarded as being one of the favourites. But in terms of the other side of the spectrum, he's not playing that well. You know, earlier, Chitanagarn has had a dreadful kind of summer. You're just, you know, missing cuts left, right and centre. Not what we expect of her. Obviously, he's such a great player, particularly last year. But this year, just since you won, actually, back in June, just fallen off the planet. So it's got mixed results here. Of course, we're coming to the end of a long season, you know, a big international schedule. It's kind of this event sort of stuck in the back end of the season, but it's again, you know, it's the last chance to win the major this year. So it's who could pick up the title? You know, again, I have to say, you know, so I think Lexi is coming in here, you know, confident. I think she has a good self belief. And she's obviously playing well. And I think it'd be a great story, Fred, if she could obviously start the year in the majors with that disappointment, but then end it by picking up a big one at the end. As I said earlier, I always root for the story. And I think the best story would be if Lexi Thompson won this week and completed what's been a tumultuous and fascinating season.
Yeah, that really would be. I mean, that was just devastating, that four-shot penalty. I mean, you could just see it. It affected her for a couple of weeks, actually. She had to deal with the press and all the questions about that. So it was a problem. My question, what has happened to Aria Jutanagarn? Do you have any thoughts on that?
It's strange. You know, we heard about her. I was at the Women's British Open a few weeks ago at King's Barnes, and obviously she kind of she had a poor finish there. Didn't do much there. So it's strange. You know, it's peculiar. We didn't really kind of. Wasn't sure whether there's an injury problem there, it's going to be affecting her or not. We're not too sure. You know, it's a strange situation. So I'm not sure what's happened to her, you know, why she's having the results that she has been having. Obviously, she won back in June, I believe. And since then, she's practically missed every cut on tour, you know, in the majors and also elsewhere. So it's a strange one. You know, like you say, you know, obviously a player who we think of as being one of the top five or six favourites every week she plays, but she hasn't shown that form. And will we see it this week? Well, you know, the odds don't look very likely. So I'm not sure what the reasons are behind her decline, but as it seems, Lydia Ko, you know, a player who was so, you know, assured and so confident, so kind of, you know, just every part of her game was so solid and consistent, you know, a little change, a little something going wrong, it just completely changes the whole psyche of the whole thing. So I don't know what's happened to Aria. It's a strange story, and obviously I hope she gets back to form soon, because it's been disappointing to see one of the game's top players, you know, have a poor run. So, Fred, I can't answer your question, but hopefully she can, because right now she's probably the only person who really knows what's up right now.
Yeah, it's very surprising. Her sister, Maria, is having a very good year. She's, you know, seems like every week she's at the top of the leaderboard. So, Lydia Ko, it's just been a real, not her normal situation this year, but we really should have come to expect that. I mean, she was riding such a high for 4 or 5 years at such a young age. You know, she went through all these changes, as you mentioned, you know, even changed clubs, coaches, all kinds of stuff. You know, she had to have some kind of burnout at some point. You know, the demands that were placed on her and the pressure to perform at that level every week, it just becomes too much. And you know, the mind just finally shuts down and says, I don't need this anymore. I'm just going to go play my game. And you could tell she was not having much fun. When she was here in Toledo for the Maryland Classic, I mean, her body language was not good. And, you know, when I've seen her on TV this year, it was not good. So I hope she gets it together. I think this would be a perfect event for her to win, because This is a shot maker's golf course. Length is not the issue at this golf course, and she has won there before, so she has some good memories. So I wouldn't be surprised to see her win here. We didn't mention Brooke Henderson. Brooke's been playing very well. She could be a factor. Michelle Wee, we should mention, is still recuperating from her appendix surgery, and she is withdrawn from the Evian this week, so she will not be in France. Sun Young Park, of course, is Carlos's favorite. She just had a fantastic year. And then Angie Chun won here last year, so we can't count her out either. So there's some of the top names right there. We're going to talk more about that in a second. But I want to talk just a little bit more about Stacey Lewis. And I kind of wrote down the question, is Stacey Lewis ready to win another major coming off her big win in Portland? Well, for me, Kieran, I really think that her win got a tremendous monkey off of her back. Again, you could tell by her body language. For us, I've watched Stacey Lewis since she was at Arkansas. She would come up here and play in the tournament. We interviewed her way back then, and we've watched her ever since, interviewed her several times. And she was putting too much pressure on herself, all the runner-ups, all the top tens over the last couple of years, but she was not enjoying playing golf over the last couple of years. And so finding the winner's circle, finally getting through, getting that win, kind of, wanting to win for someone else, not putting the pressure on yourself, helped her break through. And so nothing helps calm the mind like winning. She now has that confidence. She knows she can compete and do it again. She can mix it up with these young girls like Lydia, like Lexi, or Brooke Henderson. So, Kieran, I look for Stacey to have a very good week in France this week. And do you have any thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think in the end, her win was obviously remarkable. It was obviously well documented, and for Houston and donating all the money to the fund there, it was fantastic. However, the fact of the matter is, Fred, she can't win this week because she's not actually in the field. She's not playing this week, believe it or not.
Oh, how did that happen? How did that happen?
I don't know. She obviously heard you were going to talk about her this week, so she decided to mess things up for you. But
I wished on that one.
Yeah, which is very surprising. I'm not sure what the reason is behind it. I think she's perhaps wanting to stay back in Houston, maybe, given what's happened, and stay with family and friends and try and, obviously settle things in after, obviously, the storm surge there and what happened and obviously the damage and loss of life and so on. So maybe it's we've obviously seen Ernie Els do similar. He was due to play this week, but he's staying at home to the state in Florida. So maybe the circumstances of the week or the past fortnight have taken their toll, but Stacey's not in the field. So the last major of the year, it's surprising she's going to miss it. But so if Stacey's going to pick up another major, she'll have to wait until the A&A Inspiration to do so. But Fred, like you said, I think for her going forward, though, given that win for the first time in several years, obviously she had so many kind of second places in that time as well, to get that kind of monkey off her back is a positive thing, and she's such a good player. Obviously, very experienced, and she's done it all before, and there's no reason why she can't hit those heights again, because she has that considerable knowledge of pressure situations. She's a great competitor, and obviously still a fantastic player. So Stacey, will be a major champion again, but Fred, it won't be this week, I'm afraid.
Well, I have to write that off as a senior moment. I didn't look at it. I just assumed she would be there. I just missed that she would not be there.
I was checking it as well. I was wondering where she was. I was actually looking through the betting odds, and I couldn't see her name. And I was like, where is she?
Wow.
I saw the field there, and she wasn't playing. So, yeah, I don't know why, but strange.
Oh, well. Well, moving on, I wanted to ask you a question. I think I know the answer to this, but do you really consider the Evian Championship a worthy fifth major for the LPGA Tour?
And what is my answer going to be, Fred?
I think you will say no.
And you'd be correct. No, it's not a worthy major for the LPGA Tour. I think it's problematic that it's there. I think in the end, the majors for all sports, whether it be tennis or golf, of course, are really individual sports. It's all about the history and the prestige and trying to create comparing yourself to the legends of the past. And even though Evian's been a fantastic event on the schedule for 20 years, everyone's been a fantastic sponsor, but in the reality is, I think you sort of touched on it earlier, they essentially bought themselves a major championship, and I think people kind of realize that. It doesn't feel very organic, and it feels invented. And you look at the men's game, obviously you've had the concept of the majors is an invented thing anyway. You know, Arnold Palmer sort of created it, if you like. But all the majors back then, the four events, were really big tournaments back in the 50s and 40s. You know, they were all well established, the Masters, US Open, Open, and the PGA. And bringing them together under one umbrella was obviously was quite a sensible thing. It made sense. And for the past 50, 60 years, we've had that really settled as being the four kind of ultimate barometers of greatness in the men's game. And we haven't really had that, you know, in the LPGA over the years. Obviously, the Women's British Open became a major back in 2003. But that made more sense, given, of course, the men had their Open Championship in the UK. So that made sense to have a women's version of that. And you know, it's become a very good addition to the schedule. But the Evian sort of feels stuck on at the end. I think it's always problematic where you have winners. You know, why shouldn't, let's go back a few years ago, why shouldn't MB Park's 2012 win count as a major? Well, because it's not. You know, it seems still that one year we sort of said, well, in 2012 it's not a major, but in 2013 it is. And I don't think people really accept that. So while it's a fantastic event, it's a great field, obviously big prize money and all the rest of it, and everyone's a great sponsor, it's a fantastic venue, you know, as I said, spectacular scenery, so it has all those ingredients to be a good event, but in the end, it just, you know, is a big, say for example, the men's game made the Players' Championship a fifth major. Well, I would be against that anyway, but it would make more sense, given it's the biggest event on the biggest tour. The Evian's sort of there, just for the sake of it, and we've made it a major for no reason other than the fact that Evian put the money in, which is fair enough. You know, the LPG and the LET especially needs any support it can get. But I think Fred, you feel the same way as I do, surely, but it doesn't really feel like a major. Rightly or wrongly, maybe it will in 10 years' time, who knows, but right now it feels like a, you know, just like a regular tour event, which is a shame, but I'm afraid that's what it is. But I must quickly also mention, actually, that Aimee Azzattel, who won this event, actually, back in 2011, it's her last LPGA Tour start this week. She's obviously bowing out from the game professionally, so she'll be sadly missed, obviously, a very popular figure, one of the game's great personalities, and very likeable. So, it said, the Evian Championship, is it a major for me? Obviously, it is on paper, but does it feel like one? No, it does not.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you mentioned it right there. You know, majors should be a consensus feeling. You just don't, make the sign of the cross and deem it a major championship. If somebody's giving you a bunch of money or puts up a big purse and say, if you make us a major, we'll guarantee a big purse, which they did here. The tradition just isn't there. It hasn't had time to build over the years. With the exception of the Masters, the Open Championship, the U.S. Open, both started back in the 1800s. The PGA Championship has, a long history. The Masters gained major status relatively rapidly, but that really was because of Bobby Jones being there. And it was his tournament. So the players accepted that as an event that they wanted to win because Bobby Jones was associated with it. And then the golf course became such a hallowed ground and such a wonderful course that the players elevated it in status and media, too, very rapidly. But that's not happened at the Evian. That's not going to happen for a while. It comes at a stupid time of the year to fly everybody back over to France to play. They spent 2 or 3 weeks in Scotland and England and the UK playing women's golf earlier in the summer, and now you bring everybody back to the U.S., you fly back over. It breaks up the season. I know the LPGA is an international tour, but it just doesn't make sense. So we agree on that. While I've got you tonight, and we've got a little bit of time, a couple minutes here anyhow, let me ask you one more question real quick just to get your thought on. because I haven't talked to you since the European Tour and the LPGA announced that they're going to step in and kind of partner to help get the Ladies European Tour back on track. What's your thoughts on that?
Well, as far as I'm aware, Fred, they're actually having those talks this week at the Evian Championship. They're sitting there, and, you know, Michael Wann's going to be there. I think Keith Kelly from the European Tour is going to turn up as well, and obviously the acting CEO of the Ladies European Tour is also going to be there. So they're going to sit down and try and come up with some sort of constructive arrangement. But I think in the end, you know, the problems for the LET are extremely deep at the moment in the continent. You know, the money is just not there. The interest is not there from sponsors and corporate world. And consequently, it's very difficult to put events on the calendar. There's no sponsors, there's no money. So I think in the end, a backing from the LPGA Tour and the European Tour is inevitable. I could certainly see the LET becoming essentially kind of a satellite tour to the LPGA, which may not be an ideal world for the traditionalists, but I think in the end, if it creates an environment where we can put on, you know, 20, 25 events throughout the season consistently for emerging golfers in Europe, then that's a good thing. I think that's probably the way it's going to be. But obviously, you know, big challenges ahead because, you know, media-wise, they don't get the attention they need. Television-wise, it's not there either. So there are some really deep issues. And even though, you know, Keith Pelly and Mike Wann, you know, the two kind of innovative, you know, forward-thinking guys who've done some good things with their respective tours, Mike Wann especially, of course, with the LPGA, I think, you know, it'll be interesting to see what comes out of these discussions this week because it's a hard one to solve, and I'm not sure there's going to be an easy answer. But if we can put on more events going forward and give the women in Europe a more consistent schedule, because right now the top players are flooding over to the LPGA Tour, you know, Charlie Hull, Mel Reid, all the rest of them, and you're leaving kind of the lower-ranking European players in Europe, and of course, if those players not being the top ones not being there, it becomes even less attractive. So I think in the end, you know, more, you know, really co-sanctioned events. We obviously saw the Women's Scottish Open this year being co-sanctioned in the LET and the LPGA, and that was a success. So more like that could be a short-term goal, but I think in the end, the long term will be that the LET essentially becomes a satellite tour to the LPGA.
Yeah, I think they're going to try and elevate it higher than that, though, Kieran. The LPGA Tour does not want to lose the allure of the Solheim Cup, and they need a strong Ladies European Tour to keep that worthy. So they've got to keep some of the top women playing in LDT events, and they need at least 20 to 25, you're right. And so they've got to find sponsors. And so I'm thinking if the European Tour and the LPGA join forces, and even when I was over there covering an LET event a few years ago, they were courting the TV. They needed that TV. They knew they had to have that TV time, and they're just not getting that because they don't have the sponsor money to do it. So they've got to figure out a way to get that, to get the interest in it. So leaving that real quick, Kieran, just real quick, I'm going to give you my top five. And then I'll let you take shots at him and run through him yours real quick. But I like Lydia this week. I think she's been down for too long. She needs this major to salvage her year. Lexi is definitely one of the hottest players on tour right now. What's not to like? She's hitting it long, finding greens, and her putting has improved. So I look for her at the top. Brooke Henderson has not won a major this year either. She's been playing very well of late. When she gets on a roll, look out. I have a couple Europeans that I'm going to pick for kind of home favorites this week. A friend of the show, Beth Allen, and Charlie Hull. Charlie has yet to win a major. It's time for her to step up her game. Beth has been playing better over the last couple of weeks. She had kind of to pick it up on the LPGA Tour. She was going to lose her status. So being back in Europe may just be the answer for her to feel more at home and maybe get a big win for her. So, Kieran, what's maybe a couple of your favorites this week, real quick?
Yes, I'd also concur. I'd go Alexi as well, Lydia Ko, of course. I think those two will be up there in contention. I also quite like Minji Lee to come through and perhaps contend this week. Obviously, an Australian player, a young player waiting to make a big breakthrough. It could be this week, you never know. I like her chances. Obviously, I also like Charlie Hull as well, and she has a really good game. But I really like Georgia Hall, who I thought impressed so much at the Solheim Cup also at the British Open. So I think Georgia Hall could be the, if there's a European player to come through and win this week, it could be Georgia Hall. Still a young player, still emerging, but she's got all the tools to be a really good competitor. And finally, you know, I would probably go with, I don't know, perhaps maybe Anna Nordqvist, of course, you know, played well at Soaring Cup there at the end, and again, experienced player. Kind of seems to kind of shook off those health issues that she had in the summer. You know, also has a good solid game to do well in a major championship. So, but I think in the end, you know, Lexi and Lydia, I think those are the two names that really stand out to me right now. I would be surprised if, and also IK Kim, who won the Women's British Open, a very solid player, has had a great season, so you can't rule her out either. So there's about five or six players there, Freddie, I think could really contend this week.
Yeah, Hall is a very good mention. I really liked her play. Was it the Scottish or the Women's British that she played so well? I was really impressed with her. And I had thought about IK Kim also. You know, she's had a very good year, and this should be a very good golf course for her. Kieran, let's move into our final putts here. We got a few minutes to kind of wrap these up. So you're going to talk just real briefly about the World Long Drive Championship. 435 yards?
435 yards, and that was the long drive from Justin James. He won the World Long Drive Championship and said, I don't know about you, but for me, that's probably 2-3 woods in a pitch for me these days. 435 yards, that's a tough par 4 these days for me. Never mind a long drive, absolutely outrageous. And also, Fred, we saw a few sightings from Tiger Woods, who's going to be back as a vice-captain at the President's Cup in a couple of weeks' time. He's going to be back in the spotlight, a positive spotlight for once. But he's also been kind of peering back into the headlines again in a positive way. He announced last week he'd actually received clearance from doctors to begin chipping practice again. I had a video on his Twitter account of him pitching in his practice green, so he's out there hitting balls again, at least in his short game, working on that. Of course, he has so many issues of his short game over the past 2 or 3 years. It's probably not a bad thing for him to actually work on that, given some of the issues he was having. And also, you've seen last weekend at the U.S. Open Tennis in New York, Rafa Nadal, his pals, and they're in there watching. Rafa Nadal, of course, won the championship in the end in the family box. And also, though, I have to say, Fred, Tiger's actually, you may not have noticed this, but Tiger's finally shaved off that goatee beard that he's been having for a few years. And I've got to say, finally, it's happened. It's been long overdue. So he looks much better now. So obviously, he's getting in shape to carry some bags at the President's Cup, Fred.
Well, driving a cart, maybe. He can be one of the chief cart drivers. How about that? We don't want to hurt his back lifting the bag. Hey, with the low scoring at last year's U.S. Open at Erin Hills, rather than patting themselves on the back for a job well done, the USGA, in all their wisdom, is taking the predictable knee-jerk reaction and have plans to narrow the fairways at Shinnecock for the 2018 U.S. Open. Yep. Jeff Shackelford reports that the USGA is checking its numbers and planning on doing some narrowing for that iconic course. Of course, you know, Shinnecock, doesn't play difficult enough on most days. We got to make it tougher and make it nearly unplayable. And to close tonight, Kieran, we want to note the fact that 9/11 was yesterday. It was 16 years ago. The world witnessed the terrible tragedy of the Twin Towers coming down in New York City, and the world has not been quite the same since. The country is still dealing with the fallout from that atrocious event. Families lost loved ones, plus first responders suffer ill health today due to exposure to the dust and devastation. Now the country is dealing with two horrendous hurricanes that are destroying property and turning lives upside down in Texas and Florida. These are times that show the strength of the United States as everyone puts their differences aside and reaches out to help their fellow Americans. We ask our listeners to try to do something, no matter what it might be, to help these areas. If you can, send a few dollars to the Red Cross at redcross.org. They're always one of the first organizations to help people involved in tragedy, and your donation, no matter how small, will be greatly appreciated. Kieran, that wraps up another Back Nine Report, and we want to give special thanks to you, our good friend, for filling in for Carlos this evening. It's always a pleasure to have you on the show. And share your extensive knowledge with our listeners. And so, Kieran, thanks again.
Thank you. Fun as always, Fred. Thank you for having me.
As always, you can download tonight's show on Blog Talk or tune in. Also catch Back Nine Report TV on Roku for a different take on current golf news. And look for the new Ohio Golf Journal in your email inbox tomorrow morning. Good night, golfaholics. We hope we catch you on the back nine.
Good night. Cheers.
What happens when you take Callaway's most iconic fairway wood and make it even more versatile and powerful? You get the new Steelhead XR. Learn more about the number one fairway wood in golf at CallawayGolf.com today. Callaway, the number one fairway wood in golf.
The president comes to Ellen. Well, SNL's Trump. It's an all-new Ellen with Alec Baldwin.
Have you seen him since you've been doing this?
No.
Not at all.
An all-new Ellen, today at 3, only on NBC5. The best weather tech in Texas, with you at all times. The NBC DFW app, powered by S-Band Radar, featuring the Texas Thunder Truck and the Texas Storm Ranger, all backed by the most accurate and most experienced weather team in North Texas, the NBC5 Weather Experts.